All right, here we are. It's the Hot Stove Society radio show right here at the Hot Stove Society in downtown Seattle. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotirol, the chef in a hat.
You certainly are, and I had such a fun time hanging out at your joint and having cocktails the other night. It was good fun. I was.
I know you look like you were relaxed.
I was totally relaxed.
That's cool.
Hit a few golf balls at Broadmoor Golf Club and then came on by and had a nice martini.
I know, that was really cool.
And some delicious wine, and it was good to see you in the kitchen.
Oh, man, it's been fun. I've been cooking on that line for the last couple of weeks now, and it's I'm getting my legs back, and I'm really enjoying my, my creativeness being in the pan, you know? It's like,
yeah.
It's fun.
As I said to Leslie Kelly, I said, you know, she said, well, isn't it tiring? I was doing an interview, and isn't it tiring, and can you believe you're back on the line? I said, it is so fantastic to be cooking instead of sitting in HR meetings all day long with 850 employees. So I miss my team terribly, but there are some things that are, you know, I didn't even really think about.
Yeah, you know? This is more selfish in some ways. This is more you. I mean, this is...
We have a big show today, as we do every week. We're in the COVID-free zone. We're going to give you 2 hours off from thinking about the virus, and so... let's jump right into some of the things we're going to talk about today. Eggplant is on my list today. I was picking eggplant and cooking eggplant with Annie Elmore, one of our chefs at the Ballard Warehouse Kitchen, where Serious Takeout is. And she's doing a Vietnamese dinner, and I forget to cook the way she cooks. And I don't know if I forget or if it's just because of her ethnicity, her Vietnamese background, that I just don't know. I don't think about it in that way. So we're going to explore eggplant a little bit. She's doing a dinner with us for the week of August the 5th at the Serious Takeout. So if you want to taste some of Annie's Vietnamese food, we have a dinner box series. It goes every week. There's one. This week is huli huli chicken.
I know. I saw that. That sounds good.
It's so funny what sells and what doesn't sell. But huli huli chicken sells. also today we're going to talk about tomatoes. We're going to do a dinner party with tomatoes in every course, which is super exciting. We've got many, many questions from you, our loyal listeners. Today's the last day of our Patreon video stream. We're sad to lose it, but we can't afford it. So there it is. That's the bottom line, huh, Tina?
It sure is. It's been really fun. And for those of you who don't know, basically, we record this show on Friday mornings, and then it's released to the public on Saturday and Sunday and to podcast on Monday. But what we've been doing for the last couple of months is we have a live stream of the show on Fridays, and it's been really fun. I think maybe what we'll do is make this last show available for everybody. We'll put it on Facebook or something so that everybody can see how it was, because it's this nice interactive audience. They've just been awesome. I've become friends with many of our fans on the show, so it's been really great.
Yeah, and you even got some flowers from them today.
I did.
Yeah, Gina was very kind.
In segment four, we're going to talk about Tina's imperfect produce box. So we haven't delved into that much since the wintertime.
Yeah.
And now we are in the thick of it. So I'm curious how you're handling bruised peaches and all the things that you might show up in an imperfect produce box. In hour two, remember, we're 2 hours strong here. We're going to do a little segment on Tina's last show here and think about some of the memories we have in our 18 years or so together. And none of us really know when this actually started, do we?
Well, you and I started together in 2002. And we did that show for about 5 years, although Amy Pennington took over for a bit of that, too.
When you went to New York, right?
Yeah, and then I went to New York. Then the show was canceled for, I think, a year or two.
Just a year, I think.
And then when I came back, we resurrected it, and that was in about, I think, 2011.
Okay.
So... it's been a long
17
time.
18 years.
This is, and I've been producing it since then, and today is my last show. Hey. We didn't really tell everybody, but today's my very last show.
When I was looking around my wine cellar today, I was looking for a bottle of 2002, because that's what I had come up with also, and then I realized I don't have any, because it wasn't a very good wine year in Europe, so I got you a 2008, I think, of
Barbaresco. I'm pretty excited for that. So, okay, so I'm sad to leave the show, but, you know, it's just one of those things that after sometimes you
need to freshen up.
You need to freshen up. Things just change.
And honestly, we couldn't afford you anymore, too.
And you can't. I became expensive.
You have become more expensive anyway than when we started, and dollars are less available than when we started.
I would say in the eyes of anyone today, everything is very much more expensive than it used to be, because... it's just not as much revenue.
Like a fine wine, I have aged and become more expensive.
There you go.
Anyway, I love you guys.
We have our taste of the week after Tina's memories. We're going to talk a little bit about Dev's Meatless Monday dinner box, which I had a preview of. Dev Patel is one of our farmers this summer out in Prosser with Jackie, and he's I can't remember the region he's from, but they're all Dev Patels apparently from the Patel region of India. It's funny how that happens over there. More so, you know, for us we think of Smiths and Joneses, but over there Patel is a certain area. And of course, we're going to wrap up the show today with food for thought, tasty trivia. That's always a good time. So let's talk eggplant for the few minutes we have left. And Chef, I guess I want an eggplant dish, you know, the one that I was talking about in our Vietnamese box, which is, August 5th starts, Wednesday, August 5th. It is whole roasted, and these are, we pick the eggplants, the globe eggplants, fairly small,
right.
And then whole roast them, completely cooked through, but then take the skin off.
Right.
And what I love about this particular dish is it's got lemongrass and ginger and fish sauce, and it's served whole as kind of an appetizer. And I don't really think about eggplant in that way, and I don't think you do either. But
no.
It's very refreshing. I actually like eggplant more when I eat it like that. You know, I tend to be a baba ganoush eggplant guy, right? I love that big mix with olive oil, garlic, and sesame.
That's the basic of how I know eggplant, how I cook eggplant.
Yeah.
The other way is to slice them fairly thick and then let them sit with some salt on it,
mm-hmm.
and then grill them with a nice, mm-hmm. nice rhythm of olive oil, and then grill them and mark them really nicely. So they have a nice char, and then dice them and put them into a tomato, like a mm-hmm. feta and olives, and you know, mix them with that, kind of like a Greek salad with or Sicilian salad with eggplant in it.
Peeled or unpeeled?
Not peeled.
Not peeled. So you get some char on that
Correct.
Skin. And here's the thing. When you are grilling eggplant and you see it all black and charred,
yeah.
and you're thinking, oh, I got to throw this away. I burn it.
No.
Don't do it. It's so good when it's got a good char on it.
The skin, if it's cooked, is really
not
delicious.
Not just the skin, even the meat.
Oh, yeah. Everything has a nice char. I mean, when you grill it, everything gets a beautiful char. So it's what gives the flavor to that salad. It's basically, like I said, a Greek salad with diced, grilled eggplant. And I think it really makes it one level above. So, but those are the only two ways I make eggplant. I don't think I've ever made eggplant with fish sauce before, but that sounds delicious.
You made it with soup. I know you made eggplant soup, but that was not
eggplant
my favorite
soup
one
and
of your
eggplant.
Dishes.
I make roasted eggplant puree all the time.
Yeah.
Like I take a whole eggplant, throw them in the oven, bake them until they're totally tender, open the eggplant, and then finish that puree into a food processor with a lot of olive oil, garlic, basil, and salt and pepper. And then
so you make a little bit. When I saw it the other night under your sturgeon, it looked a little moussey almost.
Right, and that's basically because it's emulsified with olive oil,
mm-hmm.
so it looks a little bit lighter, and that's what goes on the plate first. And then on top of that, we put a little succotash of vegetable and
yum.
Fish.
Yum, yum, yum. It's time now that we got your palate wetted, we're going to move into our dinner party with tomatoes this week.
Love tomatoes.
Lots of tomatoes, and looking forward to seeing what you're going to do with that on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. And we're back. It's the Hot Stove Society radio show, and we are here at the Hot Stove in downtown Seattle, second floor of the Hotel Andra, which at this moment is closed for business, but we snuck in the back door, and here we are.
This is the liveliest floor of the whole hotel.
You know, we're getting ready to go virtual with our Hot Stove Society. I want to say starting August 15th or 16th, we'll have a series of classes that will, just like the old school, but they'll be online. And then we'll ship people their foods and do all the sorts of things.
So exciting. How do you find more information about this?
Go to hotstovesociety.com.
That's
funny how that is.
That's usually the way, yeah.
Let's have a dinner party.
Okay. I'm looking forward to that.
Tina is our special guest.
Yay.
It's all things about Tina today.
Yay,
before we start,
so
I'm
nice.
Going
like
to... Do you even like
birthday.
Tomatoes?
I love
tomatoes. Okay, Tina loves tomatoes.
Do you guys, should I really throw a wrench in it and you have to make it vegan?
Sure, why not?
No problem.
Oh, that's a challenge, you guys.
No problem. Pork or chicken?
I'm going to go lamb.
Cute.
My vegan.
Cute.
Yeah.
So this is a dinner party, meaning, just to explain for our audience, you have to use tomatoes in everything from the cocktail to the dessert. So I don't know
cocktail
how you're going
to
make a tomato-y dessert, but I trust you can do it.
Oh, yeah. No
Tom,
problem.
Tom is on top of that one. No problem.
Well, then you better get on the cocktail.
Okay. Cocktail. I'm going to do some tomato water. Have you ever made tomato water, Tina?
No. How do you do that?
You take tomato, you cut them in very small pieces, and then you put them in a cheesecloth, and you hang them in your fridge for a day, two, if you want. And then all the water is going to drip on the bottom. And that's tomato water.
All the tomato juice drips.
Okay.
Yeah. It's called tomato water.
Okay.
It's called tomato water. It's clear. It's beautiful. And it's extremely flavorful.
Yeah.
So that could be the base for your cocktail. So you could put a little bit of, take a little bit of dry soda. Which one? The rhubarb dry soda that they have. Do you know dry soda is a rhubarb soda? So take a little bit of that, mix it with the tomato, and then take some mint, muddle some mint, put the whole thing over the mint, and then finish with a dash of white rum.
Oh.
And you'll have a wonderful...
I didn't think you were going towards rum with that.
Yeah, that seemed like a turn.
Yeah,
where's the record scratch noise?
Okay, vodka. Just use vodka. Just use vodka.
Okay.
Because I know you like vodka.
That makes some sense.
Because the white rum is going to be a little sweetened.
Well,
Chef, I know I wasn't jumping. I was just jumping in because Tina jumped.
No, but white, you know, white.
She vomited over there for
white
a second.
White rum on its own is not sweet. It's a. But anyway, yes. So vodka. So you'll have a wonderful little drink to start. And by the way, lots of ice because it needs to be super frappé, super cold.
Okay.
All right. Sounds delicious. And when you add all the ice, do you lose the carbonation from the rhubarb?
A little bit, but. You know, you can't have everything. You put the rhubarb at the end. You can put it at the end after you shake and do a lot of good, cool ice mixing.
I just think that's a good technique to remember is that when you do have a carbonation, that you, if you're going to stir, if you're going to shake, you're going to do all that stuff, you do want to add that at the end.
Yeah, no, that's a great idea.
Okay.
So you don't lose all that gas.
All right, salad.
Oh, love
or
it.
Soup.
Tomato. What are you going to make? Tomatoes? But you could do both.
I could do both. Why not?
I mean,
last week we made cold tomato soup with a cucumber panna cotta, right? Remember we talked about that a bit?
Yeah.
So this week, let's just make a tomato salad. I made one with toasted garlic the other day, which I liked, and I love the flavor of toasted garlic. People always say, don't get your garlic browned, and it's just not true.
No.
You don't want to burn it or char it. Or get it to a bitter darkness. But when you go low and slow in a little pan, and you let's say you have a pan, an 8-inch saute pan that has an inch of oil in it, inch of canola oil, and you grind up maybe 20 cloves of garlic into a fine mince, and then you put it into that pan, it's like making bittersweet shallots, right? You know, those Vietnamese shallots that it's the same idea. But you just got to watch it. The garlic will stew. And you stir it a bit, and it'll get darker and a little bit more brown, and golden brown is what you want, like a golden toasty. And then you got to pull it off and immediately strain it, because if it stays in the hot oil, it'll continue to cook.
It will keep burning,
And
then it will
and
burn,
then it gets too dark. So that, to me, is an ingredient that goes in so many different places. But I really like that crunchy garlic on top of salads, like tomatoes and cucumbers. And I'm going to use your eggplant from the first segment, the charred eggplant strips. In that tomato salad with cucumbers.
Good job.
But I think the important part is do your vinaigrette, do everything, right? Do your little Dijon vinaigrette. And then at the very end, garnish with your toasted garlic and maybe some toasted basil or something of that nature. So that, to me, is a technique that
you
can use.
And a nice glass of rosé.
If you've ever had our potatoes here at that Lola, where the smashed potatoes. That's what we do. We have all that garlic that we pre-cook and then use it as toasted garlic with the Greek oregano on those potatoes. And so
good.
It's good stuff to have around. Lasts in your fridge for quite a while.
So. Yeah.
All right. Dinner, sir.
All right. So for the entree, we're going to do a stuffed tomato, nice, beautiful red plum tomato. We're going to just empty them. We're going to do a farro. We're going to cook some farro on the side, saute some mushroom, a little bit of goat cheese or feta cheese, whichever you want. That's going to melt in there.
So much for the vegan side, but that's okay.
Well, cashew cheese.
You said vegan.
Cashew cheese.
You said vegan. I thought you said veg, sorry.
That's right.
No cheese? No, that was a joke. It was
cashew
a joke.
Cheese.
Yeah, I can make cashew cheese. I like that.
I have eggplant puree. Just kidding. No, cashew cheese is perfect. And bake those little babies in the oven. With underneath, you would make a nice little tomato sauce. We just rendered, saute some onions, add the tomato in olive oil, lots of olive oil. Blend the whole thing up and put that as a base underneath your tomatoes and bake that in the oven, covered for about 20 minutes. The whole thing is going to melt together. The tomatoes are going to cook down. And the most important part of all this dish is fresh oregano and fresh basil. Right now, abundant in everybody's garden. Lots of it. And then beautiful and flavorful. And serve that for dinner. Nice little stuffed tomato.
Sounds delicious.
The only reason I thought about this is because my mom just told me she made some stuffed tomato with ground beef and pork. And I was like, yeah, that sounds like, I forgot when I was a kid, we used to eat tomato for lunch, breakfast, and dinner because that's what we had in the backyard. And at the end of summer, I was like, man, I don't want to see another tomato for 9 months. But we used to have stuffed tomato from time to time, and those are great.
Tina, what's our mixtape that's going to be playing during your dinner? Anything?
Well, Brandy
Hamilton mixtape?
Or it could be Hamilton, could be Brandy.
Have you listened to the Hamilton mixtape?
No, I haven't.
Oh,
I've listened
awesome.
To the soundtrack.
Yeah, no, the Hamilton mixtape is awesome.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, yeah. Well,
there you go. Something else to listen to.
So
delicious.
We're gonna do something, some sort of soundtrack.
It could be
you said Brandy Carlile.
Brandy Carlile.
It could be a little song of you said tomato, I said tomato.
That's true. It could be
Let's
Rosemary,
call the whole thing off.
Rosemary Clooney. Yeah, the big night. For dessert, I'm gonna take and I'm going to macerate lemons.
Uh-huh.
So I'm gonna take a lemon and I'm gonna slice it super thin on a mandolin, super thin, and then we're going to add sugar, lemon, sugar, and just going to let them macerate overnight. Mm. And you end up with a bit of a candied lemon.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to make a simple, Thomas Keller's got that 1 cup of a gluten-free flour.
Huh?
We're going to make a little tart dough out of that because you're gluten-free and vegan, right?
I'm not, but I like where you're going.
Okay. Anyway, we're going to make a little tart dough out of that. Mm-hmm. Just use Crisco instead of butter. Uh-huh. Or some sort of hydrogenated fat.
Yep.
And then we're going to slice our tomatoes and let those drain a bit. And then we're going to layer a little bit of the candied lemon and the sliced fresh tomatoes and do our fresh tart just on top of that dough.
Sounds good.
And you got to cook it until it caramelizes on the top. Because of the sugar in the lemons, it will help caramelize the whole thing. And the lemons are sweet enough that you don't need to add any sugar to the tomatoes.
Right.
So now we got a tomato lemon tart for dessert. And something like crunchy hazelnut crunch or something. So you take toasted, peeled hazelnuts, put them in. So and then you got a pan, and you're going to put in, just sprinkle some white sugar in your pan, get it mm-hmm. nice and hot until it caramelizes. But you don't want a lot. We're just making a crunch, right?
Right, right.
Then take your toasted hazelnuts, pop them into that caramel, stir it around, pour it out. You're done. If you want to make them a little bit spicy, add a little cayenne pepper or something for on top of your sweet lemon tomato tart with the spicy hazelnut crunch.
And I had some tomato water left. We mixed with some honey, and I made a quick sorbet with that to put right on top of that little tart.
All right.
Delicious.
Up next, it's time for questions from our listeners. Feel free, the Patreoners, to throw in your questions. We also have a list from our Facebook page on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Hey, we're back in the Hot Stove Kitchen on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. It's Chef Tom Douglas.
And Terry Rotiro, the chef in a hat.
We are here every week, Saturdays and Sundays. Thank you for hanging with us. We appreciate it. We got a large show today. It's Tina's last day as the producer of our show.
It is.
And so we're celebrating her a bit. But now we're going to get to some questions with hopefully some answers. From our Facebook page and also from our Patreon listener page.
Yes, there's so many great questions. You know, if you head over to facebook.com/Seattle Kitchen and like our page, you can join in on the fun. It's really active there. People share recipes and conversation and tips and all kinds of things. So your first question comes from Kate Skellinger. She says, is there a book or a guide for an enthusiast that wants to know what are common blends, etc., for spices when you look through your...
I'm sure there is a book somewhere.
A resource.
What are common blends?
Mm-hmm. Like if you're looking through your spice cabinet and you're like, wow, I've got a lot of old spices. It might be time to start using them. Can I do some blends? Can I mix things together? Maybe there's some tips.
Oh, that kind. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about like what you see in the fresh produce department, you'll see a poultry blend or a beef blend or something like of that mm-hmm. nature. I would say yes, there are some blends like a poultry.
Tons.
Yeah, a poultry blend would be thyme and chives and maybe sage and some parsley or something like that. Whereas a beef blend tends to be a little bit heavier duty, with it's definitely based in rosemary, some savory or things of that nature. So yeah, there are some blends.
I would definitely go into something like Jerry Tronfell one time wrote a book on herbs and seasonal and all that stuff.
Who is that?
Jerry Tronfell when he was at Poppy.
Okay.
Before that, the Herb Farm.
Yeah. I mean, those kind of books are very useful to have an understanding of the base of each of the spice. So cumin is extremely pungent. It doesn't just go with everything. You have to use it sparingly. Cinnamon, nutmeg is the same thing. You don't want to use a bunch of it because you're going to overpower everything you taste. So a balance is important. And like Tom said, it's important to know if you're doing, you know, fish or you're doing beef or you're doing broccoli or you're doing mushroom. You know, those are two different kind of spectrum. So that's important.
It's really about, it sounds like it's about research and practice.
Correct.
It's also about, no matter how you blend them, if they're old, they're old.
Right.
And they're just going to lose their fragrance. And so the important part is don't buy too much when you buy.
Correct. And don't be afraid to share with your neighbors if you have too much leftovers and you need to have some new one.
Okay. Monique has, this is a great question. What's your favorite guilty pleasure, food-wise?
Food-wise.
I have one, I think.
Okay.
It's really that pizza at Serious Pie that I can't stop. Mm-hmm. That once a month, I've said it many times on the show, that I go once, maybe even twice a month. And it's just, it's that basic, you know, the mozzarella.
Mm-hmm.
It's just delicious. I eat the whole pizza. It's definitely, like, I take a lot of pleasure in that moment of time eating that pizza.
I think grilled bread for me is probably my biggest guilty pleasure. I mean, I could have grilled bread with just about anything, even by itself many times. Mm-hmm. but, you know, like last night I came home, 9:30, I was hungry. And of course, my wife is always stunned. She goes, "You have an entire restaurant." I go, "Well, I'm not feeling like eating when I'm cooking. You know, it's not the same thing. You know, I just want to sit down." And so tomato, mozzarella, some basil, fresh olive oil, salt, pepper, and a nice piece of baguette.
Did you pan fry the bread? No.
In the oven.
In the oven, like under the broiler.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then nicely toasted. To me, that's a guilty pleasure. That bread, the dish with... Without the bread, it's just not the same. You know, and I think that's my... Bread is definitely my guilty pleasure. That's why I look the way I do, because I'm carrying baguettes with me.
Right. I would say mine is, my wife, Jackie, her favorite food in the world is popcorn. And my favorite guilty pleasure is... I don't love popcorn like she loves popcorn, but if I'm going to have it, I want plenty of butter on it. And so when I look and I put into the pan, you know, after it's popped and I look and see what the right amount of butter is, then I double it. And so that's my favorite guilty pleasure when it comes to a food that I like, I don't love, but then I start to love it after that.
Yes.
All right. Al Bergstein-Stein. I hope I said that right. Sorry, Al. My son in Alaska brought me a couple of pounds of frozen halibut. Since no parties, if I defrost it, what can I make that will last longer so I don't waste it? What do you do with that?
I would definitely first take what you need for your dinner, for you and your friend, your guest, or whatever.
Which is what, 2 5-ounce portions,
Two
right?
5-ounce portions. And then the rest, I would smoke it. Go lightly smoked. You know, give it a nice little spice. We're talking about using spices. Put some spice around it. Give it a nice, a very slow smoke. And then you'll have a piece of halibut that will be cooked, smoked, and then can keep for much, much longer in your refrigerator.
So you're talking a hot smoke.
Correct.
Okay.
Like a 80s, you know.
You don't see halibut smoke very much, I think, because it has so little fat.
Right.
And so if
it dries out easily.
I would make like a, if you're going to smoke it, then go ahead and turn it into like a halibut, smoked halibut pate, like you see smoked salmon pate. So it's 50% cream cheese, 50% smoked halibut.
Right.
And then that'll last. It won't last forever, but it'll last maybe a week in your fridge.
Right.
Yeah.
But you could, my point is once it's smoked, even if it's still a bit dry, keep it that way until you need to use it. And then you can mix it with something moist, like you said, like a cream or a vinaigrette or something like this. But at least you have it in your refrigerator and it would last for quite some time.
Nice. All right, Lori Dragseth has a question about fresh peas. What do you do with fresh peas?
Oh, my God. What do you not do with fresh peas? I mean, fresh peas is good in just about anything as a garnish, especially right now. I have some in my backyard. It's so delicious, raw.
One of the things that I'm amazed with at our farm is I never thought about this much or even did it before because it's just I'm not a farmer. But when I do go to the farm, and we pick something, eating something warm right off the plant. Like yesterday, it was 108 degrees at the farm.
Ooh.
Those peas are pretty much steamed in their own shell at that point.
They're ready to eat.
Yeah, and so just eating that warm produce as you pick it is, I think, really kind of exciting.
Yeah, I mean, talking about tomato, talking about you know, fresh curd, cheese curd, peaches, nectarine, apricots. You know, I mean, all these things are really delicious to make a sweet and sour kind of salad. Just a little dash of vinegar, nice olive oil, salt, pepper, and then you've got a wonderful salad on your hand, and it's scrumptious this time of year. This is when we enjoy it.
All right. Annie Robbins Tom wants to know, what is your favorite golf hole?
Oh, man.
There's so many.
Of the courses I've played myself, number 8 at Loch Lomond Golf Club, 25 miles north of Glasgow in Scotland, is unbelievable. It's
difficult.
Got a 400-year clubhouse right there on the hole. And if you look up LochLomondGolfClub.com, you'll see a picture of our clubhouse. I'm a member there, and it's spectacular, and it's dreamy, and I love it. If you're looking for something that you can go play yourself, number 7 at Pebble Beach is a tiny little par 3, or number 6, the long uphill par 4 or 5, I can't remember, but beautiful golf holes.
Number 6 is when you come back from the beach and you go up that fairway between the woods. This is where I almost killed the squirrel the second time I set foot on the golf course.
Yeah, you almost killed
I was at Spyglass and I was like, I almost killed
Pebble
the
beach,
squirrel.
I was talking about.
Yeah, I'm the Spyglass, but it's also, oh.
All the animals you've eaten and you're worried about killing the squirrel.
I just was on the golf course. I didn't know if that was legal.
It's only legal if you eat it afterwards.
Okay.
All right. Next question.
You have time for one more. Lori asks, with tomatoes in season, what's the best base tomato sauce? Some people blanch and grate, some saute or roast.
Well, it depends on the tomatoes. We grow paste tomatoes. And to me, those we pick off the vine and we put them in Ziplocs and we freeze them whole while they're warm. We literally put them in Ziplocs while they're warm and get them in the freezer so they're picked right off the vine. Mm-hmm. And then when you go to make tomato sauce, they melt in your pan like an ice cube.
Mm-hmm.
Just add a little bit of garlic, a little bit of basil. 5 minutes later, you have tomato sauce. So
that just sounds amazing.
It is amazing.
Yeah, it is. It is definitely
delicious.
The way to do it. If you grow those tomatoes, right. Those specifically made for that tomato, those are
but any tomatoes you want to make sauce out of, do it right when you get them. Make your sauce, get it in the freezer so that it's ready. It's at the peak of its ripeness when you thaw it.
So. Yeah, and then when you put it in the freezer, put it in a small container so you can only use a little bit at a time. Don't take 5 gallons out of the freezer at one time. So.
Yeah.
You know, when I was in Spain, I liked when they crushed the tomatoes. Kind of, it sounds like just like
that. Pan on tomquet.
Oh, it's my favorite, that fresh tomato on bread like that.
On toasted baguette.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
All right. Let's move on to our next segment. Time for Imperfect Produce. Tina, you've got a box that you're going to describe for us.
Yes.
When we come back on the Hot Stove Society radio show on Cairo Radio 97.3. And we're back at the Hot Stove Society in downtown Seattle. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotiero, the chef in the hat.
We are celebrating our Imperfect Produce. One of the things you and I have talked about over the years, and we try to tell our young cooks, and it doesn't always get through, because people are so intense about the look of their produce rather than the taste of their produce or even sometimes the price of their produce.
Yeah.
And so by saying that, one of the things I've taught my young chefs to do is to buy number twos. And number twos are generally half the price. Right, number ones are the pristine little things that you see at the grocery store—the perfect mushroom, right? The unblemished apple, all those things. Number twos are the stuff that they cull. Generally, if they were to have them at a grocery store, they cull them and throw them out, or pretty much throw them out.
Yeah.
So one of the things we look for are number two things like melons.
Yeah.
Are a classic case of number twos that are better than number ones because they are at their peak of ripeness that they're starting to. They probably only have a day on the shelf. Right. Grocery stores don't want things that last one day.
Correct.
Right? They want things that last.
They want the nectarine in January to be ripe by August.
Yeah. So they're looking for things that are, you know, are almost green,
right.
Whereas we're looking for things that are past ripe.
That are falling off the tree.
Full of sugar. And so that's what I often look for. When you're at the farmer's market, when you're talking to your favorite produce vendor, especially at the end of the day, when they've gone through and they've been selling all day long and they've pulled some stuff that they don't think is perfect or something, kind of look behind them. See what's on the floor. See what's in the boxes back there and say, what do you want for all those carrots that you culled out of your carrot stack? And what will you take for those carrots? Sometimes they'll give them to you. I would give them money always
of course,
because they're trying to make a living. But That's the produce that I like. And generally, some of it's bad, and I'm not saying use the bad stuff. I'm saying use the overripe stuff.
There's a difference between rotten and bruised.
Yeah.
Those are two different words and two different states. I mean, bruise means something, either they, something bang into it or bird bite into it or whatever. That's not rotted. You
no.
just take a knife, you move that away, and then you boom, you get the rest of the fruit. If you're making a compote, a sauce, or whatever, what do you care?
Tomato sauce.
You're going to be cutting it in small pieces. You don't need a perfect tomato to make a tomato sauce. You need, you know, a ripe tomato, something that has loaded with flavor, and that's how you get it. You know, and same with the berries. I mean, right now, there's a lot of berries on the market. Like you just said, you go behind the stall and you ask the farmer. I mean, you know, they have tons of crushed berries and whatever. You're making jam. What do you care? You're going to take that, put it in a pot. I mean, that's not going to hurt whatsoever.
What you care is you should be looking for those overripe berries if you're making jam, right?
Yeah.
You should care just because they're the better, more ripe fruit to be using.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you're going to process it. So, Tina, you get an imperfect produce box every week, is it, or every 2 weeks?
I do, about every week. And sometimes I forget to update it. So, like, you can go in and change it and get what you want. And sometimes they just, if you don't update it, you'll just get what you want. What they decide. So this week was a little bit different for me because I got what I got. So I got a couple of tiny avocados, a giant yellow onion, like really big onion, two small zucchinis, lime, tofu, and green peppers.
So what was imperfect about it?
Help me with that a little bit. Avocados were really small.
So it was a size issue.
They called that imperfect. The onions were really big and usually large, I think. The zucchini were just, you know, different shape. They just weren't pretty.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, generally when I get my imperfect produce box, it's just the produce just isn't pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's, you know, a little, the
but
size is a little funky.
All.
No, not rotten
is
at all.
Is it ever overripe?
No, occasionally it's under. I got some plums recently that were pretty. They're ready to be eaten the second I open the box.
So that's the kind of thing a grocery store would never even let on their shelf at that point, right? So,
right. But I find that it's a great way, as you say, for me to experiment with vegetables and play around a bit. And also, you know, no waste. So kind of supporting that
idea. Plum is a great, I mean, overripe plum is perfect to put on a little puff pastry. Just put then sprinkle sugar on the puff pastry, seat your plum, your half plums on top of that, put it in the oven, sprinkle with sugar, put it in the oven. You get, within 20 minutes, you get this more gorgeous plum, and you just go pluck the skin off the plum after they're baked because it comes right off. Put a bit more sugar and then put it back in the oven and caramelize those plums. Oh,
yum.
So simple and so delicious with a little vanilla ice cream on top. I'm good with that.
I often end up with too many limes. They always send me, like, even though you check the lime thing, and I expect to get one, maybe two, and I end up with four small, tiny limes, and I rarely know what to do with those guys.
Personally, I would just, if they're at any point where they're getting too, like, they're starting to discolor, you know, just squeeze them and make a lime ice cube, and then you have that. And then the next time you remember not to order the limes, you'll have lime juice right in your freezer. Perfect for guacamole, margaritas, you name
that
it.
That is such a good hack.
And
that's brilliant.
You can take your lime and you can cut it from the top to the bottom and then peel the skin. Take a knife and cut between the membrane so you have what we call
supremes
of lime.
Mm-hmm.
Dice those a little bit and put that in your lime juice. So one is lime juice, the other one is little pieces of lime in it. So every ice cube has like texture of lime in it on top of it.
You guys.
Really, really pumping.
I love that. That's a great hack.
Yeah, and then if you're making a cucumber soup, let's say you put your ice cube in there and it melts slowly but surely, and then you have that beautiful lime popping cucumber soup.
Mm.
Cucumber not being very strong of a flavor, so.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I made the other night on our, we had a virtual dinner class here last Friday night, I want to say it was, Food Lovers Weekend here at the Hot Stove, and we had zucchini.
Uh-huh.
With a little cheese souffle in the center. It's like a fallen cheese souffle.
Right.
But I took, you have two little zucchini, and that would be perfect for this. I took a peeler and just took it right across the zucchini, made these thin ribbons of zucchini. And then in a pan, I got it nice and hot with olive oil to it just started to smoke, because that smoke is part of the flavor I wanted to get out of my zucchini.
Mm-hmm.
And then I dropped my little zucchini slices, ribbons in there, and cooked for about 10 seconds. just enough to get a quick hot sear on there, and then put those around my cheese souffle, and finished with fresh tarragon. And I just took a little spoon and scooped out the center of the souffle and added an egg yolk into it. And it was a delicious little finish, a little zucchini way. And, you know, I've over the years, I'm not the biggest zucchini fan, but I did like that it still had texture.
Right.
It still tasted like a hot seared saute pan,
right,
which is what I was going for. And it looked beautiful, and it was something different to kind of do with zucchini. So
cool.
Anything else in your box?
What else did
you
say?
You said peppers.
Peppers are. We had four green peppers.
Peppers are coming on fast and furious right now. Yeah. And once again, we're going to have so many peppers at Prosser Farm. But
green pepper, I mean, I think the only way I like green pepper is pickled, because I'm not a big fan of. I'm not. For some reason, I love red and yellow peppers. I mean, I can eat a lot of those. Mm-hmm. But
don't
green,
they all taste the same pretty much? Red, yellow, and
I think
green.
There is some prejudice against green peppers for some reason, because I do think mostly it's the visual.
Yeah.
Personally, but
well, I think they're much. First of all, I think they're much more grassy to me in flavor. They're grassier, they're stronger in flavor, and it's not a flavor that necessarily I'm necessarily with it. And also, I don't digest them as well. So,
well, tell me how you pickle those.
My mom said that they repeat on her. That's how she. That's how she describes.
That's kind of the same with me. I eat them twice, and I'm not a big fan of that.
A fun dish for peppers. If you ever go to Philadelphia, go to the Reading Terminal Market and go to the Nick's Sandwich Shop, and you can get a roast pork sandwich with their cured green peppers on them, and they were a revelation for me because they're super hot. So they're cured with chili paste.
Ooh.
Yeah, so you layer the green peppers like halves or quarters, chili paste, green pepper halves or quarters, chili paste, and they become super spicy, but super have a super umami quality about them. So check that out at the Nick's at the Reading Terminal Market in Philadelphia. Okay, up next is Tina time, some show memories here when we come back on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's the Hot Stove Society. We're in it. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in a hat.
Thanks for hanging with us over that break. We have another whole hour of the show coming up. We have our Taste of the Week. We're talk dinner boxes. Dev and other, Dev and Annie's, and in our world, you have dinner boxes in your world.
Yep.
All the different dinner box series that we are running, and kind of some of the thoughts behind it. The Huli Huli chicken that we've got running right now, you name it. Also, we have our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. I'm going to wrap up the show. Looking forward to that. I'm not sure who's going to play today. Maybe Tina should play today.
Yeah.
I wrote Amy, the quiz. Maybe, so I think we'll have Amy Richardson.
Let's see if she's got good memories. I think we should still have Tina.
All right.
It's true. I'll probably still lose.
Chef Terry, Tina's last day producing the show is today. She'll be on this earth quite a while longer, I believe, but it will never be
I
the
hope
same.
So.
Never be the same. Do you have any favorite memories of our years and years with Miss Tina?
I mean, to me, it's more about the future. Every week, I look forward to coming here. I look forward to get the show. Tina is always like sending us the show, and here's what's happening, and then we look at it, and sometimes I'm like, oh, no, please, not that again. Oh, not that. I don't want to talk about that. So, you know, usually it's pretty good in terms of I'm pretty compliant, but sometimes it's kind of like.
I don't know where you're going with this, Terry, but
I don't either.
I'm not feeling great about it.
But keep going. I'm interested to hear where this is going to end up.
Me too.
No, I'm just saying it's
you sent me the show. Sometimes we don't like it. That's my favorite memory.
I better jump in right now and save you the show, Chef. I guess I was talking more about favorite memories of the show and things like our trip to Hawaii, which I thought was super fun. We took the show to the beach in Hawaii for a Hawaii tourism.
It was a food and wine event.
Hawaii food and wine, right.
That's also a favorite memory of mine from both of you, Chef Tom. I might cry a little bit. I had this great experience. We were walking through the kitchens in the back, and you were preparing to set your table up.
Mm-hmm.
And you were in the zone. And there were these, you wanted us to clean these shells. It was abalone shells. And just to watch you, like, your creativity build this beautiful set, like, on the fly, it was a really special moment that I got to experience just, like, watching you be this, like, I don't know why I'm crying.
Chef.
This great chef. Yeah, it was really fun. And that you kind of, like, invited us in to share that with you. It was really great.
Oh, that's nice.
And then later on that same trip, Chef Terry and Katie O and I got to go swimming with dolphins.
Oh, man, that was spectacular.
Yeah.
So that was so incredible.
Yeah. So we all got
on the
ship.
And then diving with a turtle. Oh.
Yep. Yeah. So we went, we did this special side tour. So that was really neat. And then another really fun memory I have is
Stay on Hawaii for one second.
Okay.
Remember, I ran into Chef Morimoto there, and it
was
about 3 or 4 years after our Iron Chef episode, and he wouldn't speak to me.
Was not laughing.
No, he was not laughing. 3 or 4 years later, he couldn't speak to me because we took him down on Iron Chef. It's like,
so
come
funny.
On.
Lighten up, buddy.
Lighten up.
My other favorite memory is it was your birthday, Tom, and I had kind of behind the scenes talked to Brandi Carlile's handler. Agent, yeah. And I scheduled her to come on the show and surprise you. I let the cat out of the bag a little early, so it wasn't a total surprise, but it was really special to have Brandi Carlile come in on your birthday.
That was very special.
And sat next to me, and so that was really fun. So...
And my only regret on that particular show is I don't think she sang a lick.
I asked her to, actually. I asked him to. So my plan was I was going to have her come in playing guitar and singing you happy birthday. And I think if I had asked her directly, she would have said yes. But I was going through, you know, somebody else.
Yeah.
So she may not even got the message.
Which is funny. You know, we've become friends since then. And she's awesome. She's been doing these monthly concerts. I don't know if you've watched them or not, but she does a monthly concert with each concert is a whole album, like the album from front to back.
Oh, wow.
And the first one I saw was her newest album, The Joker, but really, really good and really fun. And it raises money for her band and, you know, other expenses that you run into when you can't anymore and can't have an audience.
Yep. I have one more time that I've got to share because it's pretty funny. You probably don't remember this, but this was a long time ago. Like, you know, probably 2003.
So the, 1 year after we started.
Right? Yep. The three of us went out with Cynthia Nims, and we went to, I can't remember where we went, some great restaurant. Afterwards, we went to the Keys Piano Place, and Terry sang.
Oh.
And brought down the house.
Oh, Jesus.
And then we'd go out, and my car wouldn't start. It had run out of gas. And, Tom, you walked to the gas station and helped me get gas in this gas can. And we put gas in my car, and I went
and
on.
That really was the beginning of the Tina that I know today. I also really enjoy our annual Xmas cocktails and
those
gift
were
exchange.
Cool.
Super fun. Terry's been kind enough to host those more recently at his restaurants. And
It's been fun. But also, really nice. I really enjoy talking food with you because I feel like we started at ground zero with you.
Yeah.
And that's definitely...
Maybe 6 feet under.
Yeah, maybe 6 feet under, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I wasn't going to go that far. But you're right, Tom. It's probably below zero. And it's very fun to watch you talk about food now because you're talking about it, even though... And you have all these different restrictions and or diet that you go on. And and it's very cool to see that the interest and you're putting 100% into it. That's very cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like we've done mission accomplished. At least we saved one soul.
You certainly did.
I like how you talk about it as saving a soul. Because she was not a foodie at all.
No.
No.
The Tina that I met...
She did not have the soul for it, and now she talks about it like she has a soul for
when
it.
When I met Tina, she was Dave Ross's producer at Cairo, and her whole thing was, and I still think it's what gets you motivated, is that that hour right before showtime when everything's starting to pop and you've got you're lining your guests up and you're talking with Dave and the news is coming out that morning and every, you know... His show, I would say, is a little bit more of a national show even.
Yeah.
So you're trying to get the latest book author, whoever it is. Much more of a, when you watch TV shows about newsrooms, much more of that type of interaction with Tina
environment,
at that point.
Yeah.
And then I know when I got sat down in front of the microphone and said, okay, it's your show for 3 hours live, having never done it before.
Yeah.
Oh my!
Yeah, you filled in for Dave Ross.
So that was something else. So, all right. Coming up next, we're going to have our taste of the week, as we normally do. We have been out and about, or cooked in our own kitchens, and we're going to share with you what tickled our palate.
on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. The Hot Stove Society, we're back in it. We're cooking away. Our show has got a few more, minutes here left, maybe a couple more segments. Chef Terry.
Chef Tom.
It's time for our Taste of the Week. And we have been out and about, or at least I have been. I don't know about you.
I've been cooking a lot at Luc. I've been on the line for the last couple of weeks now. And it's definitely very nice and refreshing. You know, it takes a few days to get the legs back on. But definitely a lot of fun. And I think the highlight this weekend is spot prawn. Uh-huh. I mean, they're in season and they're here and they're, you know, they're little magical, little beautiful little things. And I love so much from Seattle. And one of the key of getting attached to this city, spot prawn was definitely one of them. You know, halibut, salmon, obviously all these different seafood items. You know, I cherish so much all the time. But anyway, the spot prawns are in and remind me of how you got to be very gentle to those, gentle in the way of like, don't overcook them.
Oh, for
cook
sure.
Them
or
really,
don't cook them at all.
Oh, don't cook them at all, yeah, one of the two. But if you're going to cook them, make sure your pan is hot before you do anything. So you don't waste your time watching the boiling of a spot prawn. Make sure your pan is super hot. Drop the fat or the oil on top of the spot prawn. Salt, pepper, a good amount of pepper, obviously.
Are we whole prawns at this point?
Whole prawn, heads okay. On, shells off, because I like to take the shell off the tail and just have the tail showing. But I like to keep the heads on because I love sucking on those heads. Oh, it's so, the flavor in that you take out of that head is so good, so sweet. So anyway, take a very hot pan and then, so you already have all your prawns with oil on it, salt, pepper, and you just drop that in the pan, don't touch it. Let it sear, and then within, you count to about 10, and then you flip it, do the same thing on the other side, count to 10 again, and then boom, they're done. Take them out, and then serve them with whatever. We're doing a little succotash of corn, peppers, red and yellow peppers, red onion, zucchini, almost like a ratatouille, just no eggplant in this one, and serve that on the base of the plate with the spot prawn on top. And I made a broth of spot prawn and chicken, reduced down together, and then finished with a nice amount of olive oil and a little bit of harissa aioli in it. It's almost like a roux idea, but much more liquid. So like a soup, like a fish soup broth. Oh, my God. A bowl of that is never enough. And, of course, the most important part is grilled baguette with it. So it's nice, and it's got a nice char flavor to it, but... Mm-hmm. Nice and tender on the inside, so you can soak up all that broth. Oh!
I stopped at Wajamaya, and I got 5 pounds of live spot prawns on my way to the farm last week.
Mm-hmm.
And they were still...
Kicking when you get there.
Still doing great when I got there. And of course, you have to, at that point, if you're not going to use them, you have to take the heads off.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so we were going to use them, but I am not, like you, I am not a head sucker.
Oh, no?
And neither is any of my group over there. So I took the heads off and made a stock out of them, a little shrimp stock.
Mm-hmm.
And then we served the tails raw. So just quick squeeze of lime juice and some black garlic salt.
Mm.
And that was it.
Almost like a ceviche idea.
Somewhat, but not even that long.
Okay.
Just right before we served them. They were just like you would get
sweet.
At a sushi bar when they have
so
a,
sweet.
The live tank on the... Like at Shiki, they have a live tank right on the sushi bar. And when you order a spot prawn, they get the net out and pull it out, and you have your spot prawn nigiri, oh. Right? So it's really – those are a special treat here.
Special treat, yeah. I recommend for anybody to buy at least a couple pounds of spot prawn and treat yourself at least once a year to remind yourself why you live in the Pacific Northwest.
My taste of the week is – Oh, I just had it on the tip of my tongue when I started talking about spot prawns.
Oh.
Let's go back there for a minute. Oh, my taste of the week is I went to a little restaurant called Blue Glass over there on 65th in the 65th neighborhood.
I go there all the time. It's
you
my
go
favorites.
There all the time? Yeah. It's a cute little spot, and I just thought that, you know, I was with a couple of friends. It's maybe my third restaurant meal out and about. We were nicely distanced. But I just ordered one of everything. There were four of us. So I just ordered one of everything off the appetizer menu. So it reminded me how nice it is to eat that way.
Right.
And so I thought a couple of standouts on their appetizer menu. One was their little Andalusian meatballs, a little Spanish meatball. They were really good, nicely spicy and tasty. And then the other thing that I thought was of
very tasty was their arancini. The arancini have kind of gone the way of, they're just a, like burrata. You know, they're really popular, and it doesn't really matter what ethnicity the restaurant is that you're in, but they often are on the menu somewhere because they're a great little shareable app. There, I thought their version was particularly good and fun, and I quite enjoyed it. Crab beignets, the little donut beignets with some Creole sauce, you know. So it was a nice little experience. Good wine by the glass, and the people there just took great care of us.
65th and
8th Northwest. Okay. So if you, 65th and 8th is where the Goodwill store is on that corner there. So you take you go right on 65th.
Okay.
And it's maybe, you know, there's a couple of good little places. Jolie is J-O-L-I is there. Mainstay, which is a nice deli. You get a rotisserie chicken or some salads.
Provisions. There's like a little provisions place over there, too.
I think that's called Mainstay.
Mainstay?
Or is that
Provisions? Yeah, that's right.
Mainstay Provisions, yeah. And there's the laundromat there, too. So if you have to do your laundry, you can go pop your laundry in and then go get a glass of wine.
Nice. I like when everything is suitable like that. I like when
it
works together.
It's right in my neighborhood. It's funny you say that. I have a taste of week I'd love to share. We have a couple minutes left. Back to the Ballard world of things. I took my little beach cruiser out last night and went to house and went over to Old Ballard. And it is amazing over there right now. All the restaurants have finally figured out a way to be outside.
You know, that's all happened in the last 2 weeks or so.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's really fun. And it feels safe. Everything's outside, socially distanced. Everybody had masks on except when they're eating. So I went to Stoneburner, and they very graciously made me a vegan pizza. And they put some broccoli, some onion, a little poblano peppers. It was so weird.
No pineapple.
It was just like a little veggie pizza thing that they made me. It was quite good. But another really delicious taste I had was at Ray's Boathouse on Sunday. I went stand-up paddleboard yoga, and then I went over and had brunch over at Ray's Boathouse and sat outside, too. So there's some really great opportunities right now to enjoy delicious food outside. Mm-hmm. And it's serious takeout. You put some tables outside, too, right?
We did put some picnic tables down here in downtown. You know, downtown is still a bit of a ghost land, and so we feel like we're going it alone a little bit at the moment, just like you felt at Lule. You were out there alone while you were open. But we do have 6 little picnic tables out front. It's just a curious time. But going back to Ballard for 1 second.
Yeah.
You know, they eliminated parking on the street of Old Ballard Avenue, and they put all these parklets out in front of each restaurant.
Yeah.
These street eateries. It has a great sense about it right now.
It's awesome.
When I drove by last night, it was full.
Yeah, I was there. I was there last night.
Yeah, it was full.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that I understand they're thinking about in the Pike Place Market is taking the traffic out of Pike Place Market, which I really hope they don't do. To me, it's part of the energy and soul of the Pike Place Market. I do not mind if they take some of the parking out for a while.
Right.
But dodging cars at Pike Place is really
part of it.
It's part of the game of being a market shopper. And I just hope that they use their sensibilities. You know, in the 1970s, many, many urban cities got rid of parking and some streets and made big walking pedestrian malls out of it. And it just killed quite a few.
Well, it takes the soul. It's going to take the easiness access to.
Yeah.
I think it's going to change the Pike Place Market if they do that tremendously. Yeah.
Yeah. So up next, we're going to talk about our dinner boxes. Terry and I both offer dinner box series, and we're starting to offer some more ethnic ones that I think are kind of interesting in their nature. On Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. We're back. Chef Terry Rothereau, the chef in the chapeau. I'm Tom Douglas. We're at the Hot Stove Society. It's time to talk dinner boxes, and I know that that's a big part of what we're doing out at Serious Takeout in Ballard. If you haven't been, it's super fun, I think, anyway. We turned our catering kitchen, which, of course, there's no catering anymore, so we had this big kitchen out there, and we turned it into, on our loading dock there, we actually turned it into a to-go pickup area, and we've been doing Serious Takeout. So it's based by Serious Pie, but at the same time, we've been running dinner boxes kind of relevant to whatever the mood is at the moment.
I must say, you guys have been astonishingly creative. I am very impressed. It's like, oh, my God.
Our Hamilton dinner box really was something.
Yeah,
else.
I mean, yeah. It's like Hawaii, yeah. And then all kind of the hot dog. That's very, very creative. It's nice to just keep the spirit up, and I think people are totally into that these days. With the time we're in right now, mm-hmm. I think people really love the idea of something different, special. You know, that's one time.
It isn't just the spirits of our customers either. It really is. Our team is having a great time.
Oh yeah, you can tell.
Thinking about the boxes and then coming up with them. And one of the outcomes of this is that we've been exploring some of the ethnicity of our team in a little bit different way. So, for example, Roki. I don't know Roki's last name, but we have this young Kenyan cook that has some interest in kind of marrying the Kenyan style of barbecue to the American style of barbecue, the American Southwest. And he did a tasting for us. We always do a tasting before we put, you know, when we put a box together, we kind of put the meal together and see, is it balanced? Is it, does it, something we can produce? Does it travel well? Is it reheat easy? You know, there's a lot of criteria that we think about in a dinner box, because you don't want to, the last thing I want to do is put something in there that takes you a half hour to figure out how to cook at home, right? It needs to be simple. Anyway, just did this, talked about Kenya and talked about why he is doing the food he's doing and what his family ate, what he learned from his grandparents, what he learned here in the States and what he liked about it and how he married it to the Kenyan food that he is making. Super interesting. So we started thinking about that more. And we have a young lady who's been a chef with us here at the Hot Stove Society and in some of the restaurants named Annie Elmore. And you hear the last name Elmore, and you would never guess that she was a Vietnamese woman. But she's totally sweet. She's a black belt in karate. Even though she's tiny, don't mess with Annie Elmore. She is making a Vietnamese box that we're starting on August 5th. And our boxes generally start on a Wednesday, and then they go all the way through Sunday, five nights. So looking forward to that. Vermicelli with meatballs and this kind of cool octopus and squid salad. And we talked earlier about the eggplant appetizer. She's doing these shrimp firecracker kind of spring roll things. And then doing this roasted eggplant with fish sauce and ginger and lemongrass. And the favorite, you'll like this, because, you know, there's a lot of French influence in the Vietnamese culture.
Right.
After the colonialization, and whether that's right or wrong, that's not what I'm here to discuss so much. But she's doing Vietnamese coffee eclairs.
Those are delish.
Vietnamese coffee with the condensed milk in it. And so she's making these little eclairs. So we have a few of those coming up. And then we also have a Meatless Monday box. So Dev Patel.
That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, Dev Patel was one of our farmers, and I have been after Dev. He's a terrific cook, and I've been after him. You know, I feel like there's an opportunity for Indian food in downtown Seattle, but I can't do it. I'm not Indian. I don't know that culture. But Dev, you know, first generation from India, could easily do it, but he doesn't want to do it. That's not the kind of cooking that he wants to do every day. He's much more like he'll go stage in the fanciest restaurants. He was in Denmark, and he was in Mexico City when the virus hit, and he loves the fanciest restaurants around the world. And if you've ever been to a Prosser Farm dinner, he's kind of the driver behind the 10 courses there. It's a lot like the Rovers cooking, right?
Right. He's super cool. I like Dave. Dave is really cool.
Anyway, he's doing a Meatless Monday box. That's going to be on August 10th, and I did the tasting for it. He left when he was cooking it at my house. He left a set of everything in my refrigerator, and so I had it for dinner when I got home. I never knew that I liked dal. I just think of lentils. I'm not a lentil person. What can I say? I don't love lentils. Yentl and lentils right now, but it just was never my thing. But the dal, this kind of really flavorful lentil soup, I am just a fan.
That's one of my fondest memory of my trip to India about 8-10 years ago. Getting it to the first restaurant I went to is called MTR, which is kind of the Tom Douglas of Bangalore. Like there is like 10 of them or whatever. The only difference is you go in there and they come with a bucket and a big ladle and pour you the dal into your plate. I mean, literally the guy goes around like this.
Right.
And I just went, oh my God, I want to go back to America and do a restaurant like that. That'd be so cool. But the lentils in India were just fabulous. Mm-hmm. I mean, I always love a good, I love in the winter month, I love a good lentil soup with the Obviously, you wouldn't find that in India, but with a nice pig
knuckle. Ham hock or something.
Yeah, ham hock. Oh, my God. Ham hock soup and lentils is so delicious.
I have come to this late in life, personally.
Oh, yeah?
It was nothing I ever sought out, wanted to search out. It's just...
I love
I've come
lentils.
To bean soups and lentils and things like that later, much later in life.
Yeah, those are
like
good.
Like as in the last 2 weeks.
I think I like lentils. They're good legume.
Well, we got all this stuff. He did a great little green bean paneer. He did basmati rice. And some of the powders that you finish Indian cooking with, I know nothing about, but there's these little like lime powders and things that are really flavorful and add a certain texture to some of the food. So looking forward to that. I guess all I'm saying is that an outcome of this situation we're in would be, I would say in the past, maybe 20 years ago, I might have tried to make a curry corner.
Right, right.
And tried to use my own sensibilities about curry. It's really nice from a cultural sense to talk to somebody who has lived that life and has a different sense about the food.
Correct.
Because no matter how hard I try, I will never be Indian, right? I will never come from it from that sensibility. And I've really enjoyed getting to learn more about the cultures through their food and through these young folks that work for us, what they cook for themselves at home. Like Annie had a little sale. She was short on cash. So she had a little sale of all these bows that she made at home. Oh, I love a good Chinatown pork bow, right? They were nothing like Chinatown pork bows, right? They were a whole different culture.
Right.
And in my little shallow pea brain, I just immediately went there.
Right.
But it was not, you know, this one had like a pork and pork and garlic chive sausage in it with a whole egg in there, whole hard-boiled egg.
Completely different than
right?
The pork bow,
yeah. So really, really fun, and it's been a great way to explore our team and to share some meals. And if you ever want to be on our series or try one of our series, just go to TomDouglas.com and they all pop up. And generally, this week it's Huli Huli Chicken with a rum punch and sriracha mac salad.
I just love the name.
You and I are going to do a box at our class the 16th of August, a virtual class
right here
at the Hot Stove. If anybody wants to sign up for that, it's going to be really fun. We're going to celebrate Julia Child's 108th birthday.
With butter, it's always better. I'm going to start with a pound of butter and then see what happens.
Yeah, no kidding. Her line is, everything's good in moderation, including moderation.
Exactly. Especially moderation.
Especially moderation. When we have done this Julia Child thing in the past, we've always done kind of a walk around here.
Right.
We've done maybe 10 stations with different stuff from her books. And then people walk around and enjoy, and we have videos. But now we're going to do it virtually. So you and I are going to each cook two
dishes.
And you have, you know, this is just one. People have to, you know, if you want, you can buy this, the food. You can just sign up for the class, or you can sign up for the class and purchase the food.
Right.
So that you get some of the taste that we're going to do, too. So, right. But you are doing these dinner boxes all the time, French-style dinner boxes.
Right,
speaking
right.
of ethnic boxes, French dinner boxes. Tell us about those.
So at Lule, let's start with Lule, because Lule is closed now. But we did, the most successful box we did at Lule was Bastille Day. We did a box for Bastille Day that was, you know, to me, the thought for it was, okay, I'm 10 years old, I'm going on a picnic, we're going to the ocean, the family, everybody gets in the car, bathing suit, bags, we go to the ocean, we go for a swim, we pick up some oysters. We drive back inland, and the first entry to a field, we stop, we put the blanket down, and we eat. Mm-hmm. And we have, obviously, things like charcuterie and cold chicken, you know, things like this that we eat in the middle of the field, including the oysters with a nice glass of white muscadet. And that was the beginning of the meal, and then after that, you go through the whole thing. And then it finishes with a nice little tart, usually a cherry tart, strawberry tart, you know, in the summertime. That's usually what you have. But anyway, for the box, what we did is we put a ribs and chicken, both of them ribs because it was America and I learned to learn how to cook and to love ribs. I love ribs. Mm-hmm. I mean, nice ribs are delicious. So ribs and chicken, half-roasted chicken, the traditional potato salad and pasta salad because I love those too. And then what else did we put in there? We put a nice little cake. We had a cherry cake. that we put in there, and then a nice bottle of rosé to go with it if you're interested, because that's very traditional.
Uh-huh.
But those are fun. You know, you play with those with memory. So,
yeah.
You know, you just play with your memory, and you may create a box with that. So I think it's fun.
Well, I would just encourage our listeners to go onto our websites and check out what we're doing, because it's not just Serious Pie. It's not just Luke. There's a lot of different things happening all the time at our joints, including our fish fry pop-up on the 4th of August.
Cool.
I'm cooking that one. We will be right back for Food for Thought Tasty Trivia on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society. It's time for Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge. Tom Douglas here in the corner booth.
Terry Rotiro in the other booth with the gun on.
And Tina's going to tell us about our show.
Yeah, it's time for our favorite time of day, the Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge. Here's how this game is played. You will each get 5 questions. Whoever gets the most correct is the winner. Whoever gets the least amount of answers correct is the loser. Today we are joined by Chef Bridget Charters. She will be one of our contestants playing with you guys. And you will have to then give something away to someone who loves this radio show. Today you will be playing for Jerry Kawabata. She's a big fan of our show. She's been in our studio audience. And Chef Thierry, if you should lose this quiz today, what will you give away to Jerry?
I'm going to give her a cookbook from Rover's, a Rover's cookbook.
Nice.
I was looking at one that we gave to another listener today. So
if this is the same Jerry I know, I bet she has your cookbook.
Oh, never mind, Jerry. Why don't you come to Luke and I'll buy you 2 cocktails? How about that?
Oh, nice. All right, Chef Charters, what if you lose? What will you give away?
Well, since I'm on this whole baking jag, I'm working now with Northwest Bread Bakers. They've got a Facebook site, and we're baking bread for HopeLink. So I'll do a couple of loaves of the oat bread that they're that we're all producing. I'm baking my first batch this Sunday, so I'll do a couple of extra loaves.
All right.
Chef Tom, what will you give to Jerry should you lose today?
Today, you know, we have a tradition on the dock in Ballard at Sirius Takeout of instead of having cocktail hour, we have docktail hour.
And what? I'm coming over for that.
I know.
I'm coming over.
Yeah, me too.
I'm inviting the whole radio show and Jerry to come over for a docktail at 5 o'clock someday soon when it works for everyone's schedule. And I'll be the bartender. And
do that anyway? I'm going to come over in my beach cruiser.
Yeah, baby. That's
I'm
what
coming.
We're talking about.
All right.
All right. You have to wear like the little pink swan life preserver.
You got it.
Or pink flamingo life preserver.
You got it.
All right.
Costume cocktail.
We're having a cocktail party because, you know, we have a tent and tables outside now. So it'll be good fun. And maybe we should get a load of sand to put out there.
Oh, that sounds would be fun. Awesome. All right. Who would like to go first today?
I'll start.
I'll go.
Oh, you'll go. Bridget, you start.
Okay.
I'm going to go. I'm going to mix it up here.
All right. Chef Bridget, your first.
You were up last week.
Your first question. Sour, is this true or false? Sour pickles are made using no vinegar.
True.
Correct. Chef, question number 2. When working with a blender, which of the following smoothie ingredients should go in first for the best blender performance? Yogurt, ice, fruit, or juice?
The ice.
Juice.
It's the juice, Chef. Do you know
really?
Why?
Yes.
No.
So the blender is trained to not go so harsh at the beginning, so it floats much easier for the blender to run.
Question number 3, Chef. Are Parisian limes or key limes tartar and less acidic?
And less acidic. The key limes are less acidic.
Okay, you are correct. Question number 4 for you. After adding the seed chocolate, what is the ideal temperature for tempered chocolate? 65 degrees, 83, 94, or 72 degrees?
I want to say it's either 65 or 72. Holy smokes, they're so close together.
It's actually neither of those.
I'm going to say...
She said it was neither one of those. You're out.
Oh, really?
Sorry, Chef.
Oh, okay.
The answer is actually 83 degrees.
83. Holy smokes. Okay.
All right. 2 correct to 1 incorrect.
I'm rusty.
Your last question. Purple Dargon, short and sweet, and red are all varieties of what vegetable?
Cucumbers.
It's It's actually carrots. Carrots is the answer on that one.
Louise. Did you know that, Tom?
Of course I didn't.
Oh, man.
2 out of 5 correct, Chef.
Oh, that's it.
Not your best showing.
Thanks for calling in, Bridget.
Next time you let me take the first run.
Oh. All right, Chef Thierry, are up. Chef, do fruit butters or conserves differentiate themselves by adding additional varieties of fruit pieces?
Conserve.
Correct.
That's what I meant to say. Yes, on the conserve.
All right. Chef, question number 2. When tasting Evo, if the oil contains more green flavors, i.e. grass or artichoke, and has more burn, what does that tell you about the Evo?
It's rancid.
That's not one of your options.
I think they call that incorrect, sir.
He's wrong.
You have some options.
Okay, go ahead. What's the option?
Is it made mostly with ripe olives? Is it made mostly with less ripe olives? Is it made mostly with overly ripe olives? Or has it been aged for at least 6 months?
Underripe.
You are correct. All right, Chef, your next question. Reading the recipe is important, especially with salt. If you are substituting 1 tablespoon of table salt, which of the following would be its equivalent? 3 tablespoons of sea salt, 1.25 tablespoons of kosher salt, 1.5 tablespoons of kosher salt, or 2 tablespoons of sea salt?
1.25 of kosher salt.
Correct. Wow. That seems like a real weird one, and you have 3 for 3, Chef. Question number 4. An autolyse is a baking term used to describe letting the bread dough sit just after all ingredients have been combined. This is done for what purpose?
For the gluten to break through and start rising.
Yeah, that's correct. Wow. 4 for 4, Chef. That was a good one, too. Carry over cooking is when food continues to cook after being taken off the heat source.
Correct.
Chef, that is a perfect score.
Ooh,
bam.
Wow.
Y'all can't see it, but Tom Douglas is bowing to Chef Thierry Retro, and that might be the first time I've ever seen that in my 20 years of the show. All right, your first question, Chef. For a flakier baked good, what temperature range should your butter be? You have some options.
Okay.
104 to 88, 88 to 72, 72 to 56, or 40 to 34.
40 to 34.
You are correct. All right, question number 2. What is a buckle when talking about desserts?
It's got a dough. It's fruit like a crisp, but it's got a dough topping.
Yeah, yep. Good job. 2 for 2. An allium is a variety of plant that is most commonly associated with this vegetable. Potato, carrot, lettuce, or onion? I mean, come on. That's not even fair.
For the win, onion.
When using the poke test for dough, how do you tell when your dough is done rising?
When looks just like when you tickle my stomach.
Big, like the Pillsbury Doughboy.
Like the Pillsbury Doughboy.
You push in, it comes right back out.
Exactly.
Your last question, Chef.
So wait, what was the answer?
I got it right.
You got it right. Okay. It's a little...
Does it say touch Tom Douglas' belly?
Yeah, it says right here. See Tom Douglas. Yeah. It says right there. Your last question, Chef. True or false, Dutch chocolate powder has more chocolate flavor and less acidity?
True.
That is also a perfect score, you two.
Ooh.
Wow.
How is that?
So we have a little moment of silence for Bridget Charters.
Down in flames, as they
Down
say.
In flames.
Yeah, totally.
Well, thank you, Bridget, and thanks to our players and our listeners, and thanks especially to Tina for her years of service to the show. We appreciate you and look forward to having a docktail with you soon. If you want to be part of the show, you can join the community on Facebook or Twitter at Seattle Kitchen. This show is produced by our friends at Large Media. That's LARJ Media. Our producer is Tina Null. Our associate producer, Abigail Leong. Our sound engineer is Sean DeTore. And our video producer is Mark Goodnow. And remember, if you miss any episode of Seattle Kitchen on Cairo Radio, you can listen via podcast. Just subscribe to Seattle Kitchen on your favorite podcast app.
Thank you so much for listening. Have a great weekend. See you soon, Miss Tina.
Thank you.